Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to OK, OK, We're Listening. We have a very special panel tonight. Greg Graham is with us tonight. Greg, you there?
Hey, Priscilla, what's going on?
Oh, I am wonderful. It's been a little cold here in Georgia, so I don't know, but
we'll deal with it.
Yes. Yeah. We have a special guest tonight. Her name is Sandra Oates. She works in education. And we'll get into it a little. We'll get into her background a little more and what she does later on in the show. But I wanted to introduce tonight's show. It's a very serious topic. In the news cycles lately, if we're not talking about politics, we're talking about all of this mess that's going on in Hollywood. And you have women coming forward saying that they were sexually harassed, touched. Mm-hmm. Not wanting to be touched. You got a lot of high power guys that they're accusing of doing things to them. So we're going to talk about a issue tonight. We're going to use the term consensual rape quite a bit tonight. We're going to define it first. We're going to talk about how it affects our society and our community. The phone lines will be open all night. Please call in at 515-605-9703. Again, that's 515-605-9703. But we're going to go ahead on. We're going to get right into the meat and the potatoes of this subject. Sandra, how are you tonight?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I am wonderful. My very first question, I'm going to pose it to you. When you hear the term consensual rape, or peer pressure sex. Can you kind of help us define that a little bit since we're going to be talking about that a lot tonight?
Sure. You know, when I first started thinking of the term, I realized that it's not, I guess it's a term, but it's almost an oxymoron because if you're raping someone or if someone's being raped, then obviously the person is not agreeing to engage in that sexual act. But as far as tonight's show, I'll just say that there was a recent case in California, and the definition that I'm about to present was applied to this case and how it was actually tried. And so basically it just suggests that when a victim is forced to submit to continued intercourse for a period after she or he has revoked their original consent. So if someone is engaging in a sexual act and it might be fine for that time and then for whatever reason during the act that person revokes their consent, maybe the other person will feel that, you know, maybe they're not serious, maybe they're just saying that and they continue, that is considered rape. You have to acknowledge someone's feelings at the time and you need to stop. And so when someone continues to pursue that situation or engage in that act, that becomes rape. And so that's where I think the term, you know, emerged, because initially the consent was there and then the consent might have been revoked.
Okay. So there is still a forceful act, although it's not brutal, might not be any hitting involved, but once you have said that you don't want this sexual act to go any further, that is where the consensual rape comes in. Am I understanding that properly?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly correct.
Okay. Greg, did you have anything you wanted to add on this? Do you have anything else for this one?
Well, not necessarily on the consensual rape part, but the peer pressure sex part, I think I could speak on that, especially for our younger generation. Anybody has any children in the teenagers or preteens. A lot of times, especially with the invention of social media, a lot of teens are getting pressured, boys more than women, But, you know, the boys will say that, you know, you haven't had sex yet. What you doing? You know, here is a sample of a woman that I'm dealing with. And they might find some woman on Instagram and trying to convince that particular person that this is what they're doing when they have no clue what they're doing. So it
right.
makes that young male want to act like or try to get a woman to have sex with when he's really not able or even mature enough to understand the repercussions of that. And on the verse side for a woman, you know, you have your girlfriends, you know, as a teenager or a young woman, could be doing the same exact thing, being pressured, hey, you know, I had sex with this guy. He took me here. He did this for me. And this woman or a little child is thinking of this and, hey, you know, I'm not seeing this yet, but this is what I want to do. And then she finds herself dating somebody, having sex with somebody, maybe finding herself pregnant and not realizing that this is not what something that she wants. And then find out later on that this stuff is, when she becomes an adult, you know, it might be a thing that's holding her back from being what type of woman she is or private person she is, because now she's insecure when she comes with men or trusting her female friends because all these lies and deceit that have been telling her to be a woman is actually far-fetched and wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Sandra, since you do work in the education system, working with children, there's a statistic, oh my gosh, I'm tongue-tied tonight, that says peer pressure sex starts as early as age 11 and goes all the way to 20 years old. Do you think that you encounter that, or have you ever encountered that in the past with any children that you've worked with or in that setting?
Yeah, actually, almost on a daily basis, I'm, you know, confronted with young women who are, you know, making decisions for themselves. A lot of times I meet with them after they've already made the decision and they're regretful. But I've actually had young women come to me and questioning whether it was right for them to do it. And you know, I just wanted to touch upon the whole peer pressure thing. Of course, you know, that's an age-old concept, and so peer pressure exists, and it's very true. But one of the things that I learned, actually, in preparation for tonight's show, and as I thought about it, I do recognize that is more prevalent, that more than peer pressure, it's a young person's perception of what their peers are doing that actually has more of an on how, you know, the decisions that they make. So peer pressure still is one of the three out of three categories that I'll mention. Peer pressure is on the bottom. Direct peer pressure, I should say, is on the bottom, but it's still very prominent. But the way a young person perceives their peers are behaving has more of an impact. So if the three of us are really good friends and we're hanging out, and I may not know specifically what you're doing, but I just perceive that maybe you're having sex because maybe your conversation suggests that, or maybe your boyfriend is buying you things that I feel you might be getting because you're in a sexual relationship with him, that would influence me more to make that decision, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, if Priscilla's doing it, well then, hey, it's not so bad, and I can do it too.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that you say that, I have a son. He just turned 18 today. Woo-hoo, happy birthday, Judah.
happy birthday, Judah.
Yes. When I had that talk with him, he was maybe 13. I mean, we always talked about sex, but when I noticed that I picked up his phone and I saw that some of the communication in his text messages were kind of sexual, his friends talking about it. So I was just letting him know. I said, Judy, you know that your friends they could be lying about having sex. So you can't use that as a gauge as to when you should do it. So I took him on Google. I started showing him pictures of STDs and so on and so forth. It grossed him out. And I wanted him to know, like, your friends are telling you all of the good stuff that they may or may not be doing, but I need to show you what can happen if you do this. You know what I mean?
Right.
And a lot of these kids, like you said, they may think that I'm doing something because I'm putting it out there, but I could be dry as a bone, for lack of a better term. I'm really not doing anything, but then it spreads that way. And not only do you have children having sex at an early age, but they are participating in risky sexual behaviors. And that is so very dangerous. So I agree with you 1,000,000%. And I had to go there with him. And I will go there with my daughter when it's time. I believe in educating our children as parents to equip them with information, because the kids are already exposed to it. I have to assume that all my daughter's classmates may be exposed to sex at an early age. I have assume that their parents are teaching them something. So I have to equip my children and let them know, okay, this is what it is. I don't hold back from them because those kids in school, they don't hold back. And not only that, they can influence them and pressure them.
So, yeah, so that's a good old question that we asked them right now, Priscilla. You said, you know, you have two children and you're not sure, you know, you haven't had a discussion with your daughter yet, but I'm asking either one of you ladies, when is the good time to actually have that, not necessarily talk about birds and the bees, but just explaining, like how you explained to Judah about the STDs, you know, what people are saying, peer pressure and all that. You know, when is it time for you to have that conversation with your
as soon as possible.
Like, I got daughters 12 and 11, so I already start talking to them about that. But Sandra or Priscilla, do you think it should be earlier than that?
I believe when my daughter was in the – I'm sorry, go ahead, Sandra.
No, continue.
When my daughter was in the first grade, she came home with telling me things that kids in her class were saying that were of a sexual nature. And this was in the very first – this was in the first grade. I'm talking about the grade after kindergarten. So as soon as I heard that, that tells me that she's been exposed to something sexual. So we explored it and we talked about it on that level. I didn't take it any further at that time, but what she told me, it was alarming, and I needed her to know that that wasn't okay. And I explained to her just on that level. Now, and she's in the fifth grade now, so it's even worse, the things that these kids are saying. They're talking about oral sex. You know what I mean? And it's scary.
I think parents often make decisions about, you know, how they should confront their child's development based on their maturity. And that might have worked years ago when we were growing up. But now, like you said, you really have to almost gauge your discussion and your conversation with them based on society. Because the reality is, unless you're homeschooling them and they're home with you most of the time, regardless of what you might allow them to see, they're being exposed to everyone else's children, and you don't know what other people are talking about children or not. And so, unfortunately, they are as early as kindergarten and first grade. My girlfriend's son, Gregory, you know her, somebody that we grew up with, he's in kindergarten, and he came home one day a few weeks ago saying curse words and other types of, you know, things that she never expected him to be able to, you know. And he's in kindergarten. And so it's just, that's just the reality of the world that we live in. So my daughter, when she was in second grade, actually, came home asking questions about sexuality as well, and I was shocked. And so I had to then start, you know, broach that conversation with her as well. So it really is never too soon. I mean, obviously, the way you approach it will be based on your child, but you definitely need to the conversation ASAP.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Greg, have you had that conversation, or have you been in a situation where you feel like you've had to have that conversation with your girls as of now?
I'm pretty fortunate because, you know, my wife is very adamant of teaching them the different things or the perils that we have in this particular world. We live in a country area, but, you know, she grew up in the Bronx, so her mentality versus the city life versus country life is totally different. So she is very more out there telling them the things that they need to watch out for. Now, with me, I don't necessarily speak on that particular level. I more or less speak to them about what men are about and what men are actually looking for instead of what they're supposed to be actually doing, because that's the side that I allow my wife to actually do.
Okay. And remember, listeners, the phone lines are open now. Please call in at 515-605-9703. Again, that's 515-605-9703. Greg,
I think I need a drink of water. I need a drink of water first.
You need a drink of water first?
I know you're going to ask me something.
You know I'm going to ask you something, right? I'll give you some time. I'll give you some time to get yourself together. I wanted to actually give a shout out to our sponsor tonight. Very special because we actually have her as a part of our panel. Sandra's organization is called the Rockland County Haiti Relief Program, and it's known for various relief projects offered to the people of Haiti. They provide essential medical care, educational trainings to the public, staff development trainings to local schools, administrators, soccer and athletic programs. So, Sandra, thank you for sponsoring the show tonight. I'm glad that you could be a part of our panel, especially for this particular subject. But I just wanted to ask you, being a part of this organization and helping people on this level, what do you like most about it?
Interfacing with the people and not mm-hmm. just sending things or sending money someplace and expecting that someone else or another group will handle it, but knowing mm-hmm. that every dollar that we fundraise, everything that we collect, you know, I'm a part of the actual distribution or the actual work mm. in Haiti. So that part is important to me.
So you're hands-on. And that's
absolutely
what you like,
the whole group
of
is handled. Yeah. That's really our motto. One of our mottos is we don't send goods to Haiti. We bring them there because especially
wow.
with all the mess that goes on, and after the earthquake, a lot of the things didn't actually arrive there, or if it did, it didn't go to the people who really needed it. So we made sure that was what we did. That we actually brought it to the people and delivered it ourselves.
Awesome.
So Sandra,
awesome.
If we wanted to help out or anything like that, how can we get in touch with you guys to donate or even actually go down or even sponsor people to go down there?
Well, we do a mission trip twice a year. I actually just came back a few weeks ago because we opened an educational center there, so we had the grand opening in the first weekend of October. But in
cool.
April and August every year, we do a mission trip, which usually includes a medical clinic in April and staff development for teachers in August.
Nice.
So if anyone's interested, we have a website, RocklandCountyHaitiRelief.com, or you can go on KumbitNeglaKai.com, and that's kind of like our mother agency, and all the information is there, and check it out. And if you're interested in being a part or just participating in a mission group or even donating, you can call 845-425-4623, and that's the office number. Again, 845-425-4623.
Awesome.
Thank you, Sandra.
And again, I want to thank you for being here tonight. You are just a great addition, especially for what we're talking about tonight. Greg.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Greg, did you
yes.
have your sip of water? You sure?
Yes. I'm good. I'm good.
All right. Got your throat and everything together. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So now I got a little interesting question for you.
Okay.
Greg.
Yes.
How would you, in today's society, approach a woman or inform a woman? I don't even know the correct verbiage to use, but how would you approach a woman to have sex for the first time? How do you been dating?
Well,
would you be a little
like,
hesitant?
It depends what age, Greg, you're talking about. If we're talking about the young man, a teenager, or college, or as an adult. As a teenager or as a young adult, my mindset was slightly different. You know, the only thing I was thinking about, I have to have sex, I have to have sex, I have to have sex. So I would try to figure out the best way to approach the woman so that can actually happen. Maybe by, you know, convincing or by, you know, sending letters and things, being real romantic. But the thing about that particular Greg is that he didn't really think about that person that particular way. You know, he didn't want
mm-hmm.
to set up a future with her. He didn't want anything from her. So he might have told her lies to convince her to actually get what he wanted. And not necessarily
mm-hmm.
saying that he was going to stay with her after that was done. Now, for me now, like even being married, that could be a situation as well too, because not every time that you lay down with your wife and she wants to have sex with you. So, you know, what do you do? Do you force yourself upon her because she's your wife and she's supposed to do it? Or are you supposed to be able to be mindful or have some restraint? I think
mm-hmm.
a lot of people get that confused nowadays about having constraint with their spouse. And
yeah.
they'll think that since I'm married, I'm supposed to have this like a 24/7 convenience store. So with
Absolutely.
Me now, what I have learned is basically, and my wife has, you know, told me time and time and time again, that, you know, it's not about you asking for anything at all. You know, I should be willingly wanting to give it to you and should know your needs. So, but you
yeah.
need to be doing things that I need to make me want to please you. So my
mm-hmm.
approach now is not necessary even to ask anymore. It's about, you know, I do the things that I need to do to make her happy, to make her want to give herself unto me. And then it
right.
wouldn't be an issue
right.
at all after that.
Right.
That's my basic definition for it.
Well, I'm sure
but
that you
but
have
we do
friends.
Have a.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I got a couple friends.
Mm-hmm. And you know that they don't approach it that way. So in your guy conversation,
yeah.
I mean, we talked about it a few weeks ago. Some men will send you pictures of their penises.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a friend on Facebook kind of screenshot me. This guy just sent her a long string of sexually explicit pictures of two people having sex. So unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
in today's society, it's very forward. To me, it's very rude. Mm-hmm. To me, it is very sex is more so treated like just almost an act of I don't even know what to call it. I mean, it's just there's no romance anymore. And like I said, somebody will come into your DM, as they call it, and straight up ask you for sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's ultimately the way that it is now. And I think that it's very unfortunate because we're so desensitized to sex right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's why you have all of these fetishes running amok, the peeing
mm-hmm.
on people and all
ooh.
Of that. And it's just, don't say, ooh, you've heard of it.
Okay.
And I
okay.
think that people just have so much sex, even at such a young age. By the time you get into your 30s, you just want almost the next high, is what I call it.
Right.
Just something
right.
even freakier than the last thing. And I know that your approach is nice and kind, and you talk about your wife, but you know, your single friends may do it another way. So what
yeah.
are they saying? Can you think of anything?
Man, it's a whole gamut of different things that they actually do. Like you're saying,
mm-hmm.
fetishes. And
mm-hmm.
now I see men, and it's sad to say because I see a lot of men from my particular area of the world, of Jamaica. They will come and deal with a woman that have a 19 or 20-year-old daughter.
Mm.
And the only reason why they get with that particular woman is to get at the daughter.
Wow.
Yeah, so
okay.
there's a lot of things that's going out of here that, you know, there'd be women out here that say, you know, I need a man, I got to have this man. And they'll do anything to get this particular man out there. And once they get this
mm-hmm.
man, they don't realize that, you know, he might just be a smooth, cunning guy that's trying to give you what you need because he sees your insecurities. And then he love you up, kiss you up, give you everything, but really – he's looking right back at your daughter. And I hear men say that, yo, I don't really care about the woman, man. I come into her house, I'm cool, she cooks me everything, but her daughter wears these tight little outfits around, and I get at the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
These are the type
mm-hmm.
of things I'd be hearing. I'm like, how are you going to do
wow.
that? How are you going to actually destroy that particular family? They don't care.
Wow.
They have no remorse whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that I hear. Or other men be saying that, you know, I'm just trying to get at this woman because I can. I'm attractive.
Yeah.
This is what I could do. And
yeah.
I don't really have to say much, and I just have to just show who I look like. Or, you know, before they didn't like me because I looked a certain way, but now, I'm sorry to say this, but now I work out and I look buff and I look good, and that's all they want. They want a sexy-looking
right.
man, so this is what I'm going to give them. And then I just
right.
go about my business afterwards. So
yeah.
there's a lot of men out here because there's so much women, especially in Atlanta, there's so much single women out here that
yeah.
these men just do whatever they want to do with no remorse and not thinking about what's
yeah.
going to happen to that woman, to her children, if they have a child together. It's bad.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is a sad indictment.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I could say. Sandra, I
mm-hmm.
wanted to touch on the peer pressure and the consensual rape terms that we're using. Once that happens to a young lady or a young man, because it could go both ways, what do you think the long-term effects I'm going to call it trauma because it's still trauma. It might not be brutal. They might not have physically been abused, you know, physical getting hit with a fist and so on, but it's still trauma. What do you think the long-term effects of that is?
There's a lot of effects that there are a lot of things that will impact them in their future. But even at the present time, you know, I see a very big change in their demeanor, in their performance in school, just their whole emotional outlook. But I just wanted to go back to something that we talked about a little bit because you talked about some of the perversion that exists and just how, as it stands now, you know, when that person gets older, you know, those things no longer excite them anymore, and so then it leads to the things. And I'm finding that that is happening with a lot of our young people, boys and girls. They're engaged in very brutal sexual acts, sometimes with multiple sex partners at a time. And so then what happens is they are then, and this is consensual. This is not even, you know, pressured. It might be pressured. I shouldn't say it's not pressured, but you know, when they reported to me, it's something that they were a part of and they agreed to at the time. And so they'll engage in these acts, and then when they come and they report it to me, especially if it's happened over a period of time, it's almost like it's not even a big deal to them anymore.
Yeah.
It's almost like, yeah, this happened. Like I'm thinking of one young lady in particular, and she described to me what I would say was, you know, they ran a train on her. There's actually been a change in one of our policies in our district because when we let students off for half days, a lot of times they're unsupervised, and we were letting students off for half days, and a lot of things were happening when the students were going home because parents were still working, obviously, and they were home unattended. So this young lady actually described to me there was an abandoned house, Gregory, on Route 45. There was an abandoned house on Route 45, and it was abandoned for a long time, and the kids knew that, and they would go in that home and in that house, and they would you know, engage in sexual acts. And she maybe told me about maybe 4 or 5 months after it initially happened, and as she's describing it to me, I'm trying to get her to see the, you know, the violence in the whole thing and just, you know, the abhorrence of the whole thing. And at that point, by the time she reported it to me, she couldn't even see that. And so it just really scares me to know that our young people are engaging in this and that it really will have an impact on their future in terms of their marriage. Mm-hmm. Like, it will impact their future husbands and wives because they will have a distorted perception of what sex is. And so the intimacy and the love that's supposed to be associated with that no longer even exists in their eyes, and so they don't see it. They feel objectified, and they no longer see it as an intimate act that belongs to two people who are in love. But one of the things that I was going to say is that, you know, I think what ends up happening is that they maintain involvement in exploitative relationships. So even if they come out of that relationship, many of their future relationships throughout school are with guys who, and I'm saying guys because most times it is young women who are the victim, not always, but most times it is, who they continue to get involved or become involved with, you know, boys who are abusive towards them or who have no respect for them, and their relationships just kind of follow that trajectory, right? So that they're just down the dysfunctional path, and that just kind of stays. That's their reality. And, you know, just a lot of poor decision making. A lot of times they just are not present in school anymore because their minds are elsewhere. Just imagine trying to engage a young person with algebra, you know, or with, you know, the French Revolution, and the night before you had four guys, you know, running through you, you know? Like, you can't really keep your mind on something academic when, you know, you've just experienced that the night before. So, you know, you have teachers trying to engage these young people, but they're dealing with adult issues. They're experiencing adult situations, and not even adult, perverted situations, because not even adults should be going through that either. And they have to come to school to learn, and it's nearly impossible to happen.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's a part of what we experience.
So what,
and
I agree with things... Go ahead, Priscilla. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that I agree with you 100%. I grew up in Philadelphia, and I remember a young lady. She was pretty much passed around between my uncles and all of their friends. And when I was younger, I looked at her as, of course, she was, I mean, for lack of a better term, she was a whore. She slept with all of these guys. She was with it. She would come over, and they would just run her up and down the steps, you know, in the room. And when I was older, I had an opportunity to kind of get to know her a little bit, and she was raped at a very young age, 7. And I think that experience, Brady, by a family member, it set a trajectory for her, like you were saying, Sandra, that when I see her as an older, as an adult or a teenager at the time that I first encountered her, it was very easy to look at her behaviors and just label her as a whore, whatever they called her, whatever she was. You know, I would never do anything like that. But to go back and listen to her story, how did she survive it? You know what I mean? She's a survivor. And then she took this issue, and that seems like it's the person that she became. And I think that, like you said, with these consensual rape issues, rape is rape.
Mm-hmm.
Once somebody forces you to do something that you don't want to do, still rape, whether if they forced you, they punched you, they put a gun to, it's still rape. It still leaves the same scars. And when you were just talking, you were like speaking to my soul, because I felt you 100%. And unfortunately, we have a lot of people like that among us, and you don't even realize it. You just see the behaviors, and it's very easy to judge, but without knowing that backstory, you really can't. We just see the behaviors. And like you
That's
said, it has to be rough for you.
That's a lot, you know, for a man that's trying to date a woman that's been through something like that, to say in our age. We don't really comprehend that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand
that
a woman probably went through all these stuff, and she has all these scars and bandages on her because she got the makeup on and she looks pretty and she looks like she's just handling her business. But you know, for a woman to be kicked out of her house at a very young age, having sex at a very young age, or being molested by someone in the house at a very young age, most of the time people don't even believe that she's the one that's been a victim, because they say, okay, she looks promiscuous. She looks like a person that does these type of things. So she might have deserved it. But, you know, a lot of men don't understand how to handle that or to deal with a woman that has this type of issues, because we don't go through those things. Unless, you know, sometimes, like you said, I think even the article I have read about, you know, people being raped, 1 out of 8 boys are being raped, you know, and even if the boy's being raped, he's not going to discuss that at all. You know, if a man raped him, you know, he's going to try to act macho and all that. I'm not even discussing that, but I'm just talking about how to even date a woman nowadays. Guys don't understand what they're doing by putting this extra pressure on women. Say, hey, let's do this, do that. You know, I want to get with you. I want to do this with you. I want to have sex. I want to have relations with you. But really don't care about her. And when they actually do those things and leave her, they don't understand the damage that they're actually putting on her. And it's reminding her of whatever happened to her when she was younger. And I'm just glad that we're having this type of dialogue now, that people can understand, you know, the other side of things. Because more or less that, you know, we have women that's going through these issues, but we also have to educate our men to actually understand what is actually happening in these women's lives to actually make them be this particular way, instead of putting these labels on them. Or even yet still, I don't know if this is happening in your line of work, but there be girls that go through those particular traumas of having multiple sex partners, and somebody records it. And she probably didn't really want to do that, or she's been drinking or something like that, and then it's passed around the school. And now she's labeled a big-time whore when she didn't even do anything at all, because it wasn't even at her own will. So it's sad all the way around, but, you know, these young men, they don't understand what they're actually doing to these women, because nobody's even teaching them how to be men. They're just watching TV and think this is what the way to be as a man in society, because they see whoever in the rap video pouring champagne on women or smacking their booties like they in a strip club or something. This is the way women's supposed to be treated, because that's cool. And it drives me insane. I'm sorry, I'm going all over the place, but it drives me insane. I was down in Florida, and I was in this Uber, and this young lady's probably 19, 20 years old. She's playing this rap song, and it's completely degrading women. completely degraded one. And I'm listening to the whole song, and she's vibing out to him. Like, really? Like, if a man is really going to talk to you this way and treat you this way in real life, would you accept that? She's like, no, this is a song. I'm like, this is what you feed in your soul.
Yeah.
And now it's becoming
what you feed in your soul. Yeah.
It's
that's pretty much it. I wanted to pull out a point that you made. You said 1 in 8 men or 1 in 8 young boys molested.
Yeah.
I like to watch Inyala Fix My Life on OWN. And about 2 weeks ago, she had, it was a 2-part series. It was about 6 men. And every last one of them had been molested at very young ages, probably about 7, 8, somewhere around there. And please don't bite my head off. I'm not trying to say anything derogatory towards anyone. But all of those men on that show were gay. They were gay. Mm-hmm. They were fighting and dealing with the feel. Some of them didn't even want to admit it at first that they were gay.
Mm-hmm.
But at such a young age when they were molested, you can't tell me that that didn't do something to them. And then they had feelings of guilt because they were saying that the body was responding to the rape as they were being aroused, and they felt guilty about that. And I want to touch on that with consensual rape as well, but that's just the point that I wanted to make. The entire show was about that. These young men were molested by family members. One of them was just completely passed around, and then they all are now battling with homosexual feelings. Some of them were, you know, completely out and, you know, saying that they were gay, but then there were a few of them that, you know, I'm not gay. I don't want to be labeled as that. And, I mean, if you can just imagine the day-to-day, you know?
Before we go any further, Priscilla, we have a phone call. Let's see what we have here. Hello, caller. You're on the air with OK, We're Listening. Say your name and where you're from.
Yo, yo, yo. This is Chris from Atlanta.
Oh, Chris again.
Hey, Chris.
Hey. How you doing tonight?
Hi, Chris. What you got for us tonight, Chris?
Yeah, I had a quick question. I don't know if y'all went into it because I kind of joined the show a little late tonight, but I wanted to talk about the whole rape thing. I mean, from the bottom of my heart, I believe it's very wrong for a man to force a woman to have sex. But did y'all talking to the point where, like, say a man is trying to go slow, take it slow, go slow with a woman, but pressures him to have sex, he doesn't have sex, and now his name is going around, like say, high school or college, or just in the streets as an adult, like he's gay, he doesn't want to have sex with me. There's two sides to this thing.
You're right.
Thanks
for
the question, Chris. We'll try to answer it for you guys.
I just wanted to know if y'all went into that.
We're going to touch on it now for you.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate
Keep
that.
Listening.
Thanks for calling, Chris.
All right.
All right, no problem.
Chris is 100% correct. I know a gentleman right now whose name is being slandered because he chose not to have sex with somebody. And it was just a personal choice. He didn't want to have casual sex. He kind of wanted to, you know, abstain for a little while, kind of get some things in order. And he turned a woman down and she started a whole smear campaign. He must be gay. He must be gay. So I'm not sure how often that happens, but it does happen. Does it rise to the level of rape? No. I personally don't think so.
No, it doesn't. And I mean,
no.
That rises to the level of petty. And people
petty,
are petty.
Right.
You know, that's going to happen. That happens all the time on both sides of the game. And it's wrong, and it's what you said. It's a smear campaign, but it's nothing in comparison to, you know, forcing yourself on someone, or, you know, putting someone in a position where they're feeling victimized because they can't, you know, they don't have the power to remove themselves from a situation that they're not comfortable with.
Absolutely. I love you to death, Chris, but I agree, it's awful, but compared to consensual rape, peer pressuring someone into having sex, I really don't think that touches on what we're talking about tonight. Greg, did you have something to add?
No, I agree with you, ladies, wholeheartedly. Absolutely.
Okay.
I did want to mention, though, because something that I think that our young men should be very aware of, because there was, once again, in preparation for this evening, I was looking at a case, and actually I think it was in the Netherlands, if I'm not mistaken, but don't quote me, but this couple, or these two individuals, were involved in a sexual act, and the woman explicitly said, you know, I'm willing to participate in this, but I do not want you to ejaculate inside of me. And at the time of arousal or whatever, the gentleman did proceed to ejaculate inside of her. The jury, so she then, you know, said that he raped her. The jury did not find him guilty, but she then, because they said that they couldn't determine whether or not he did it, you know, spontaneously, or whether it was just at the point of arousal and he couldn't help himself. So he was exonerated. But she appealed the case and he was convicted. So we have our young men. This is almost like a new phenomenon. Well, maybe not so new, but in terms of the legalities of it. So now the whole concept of conceptual rape also includes, if there are terms that someone puts forth in a mutual agreement, those terms must be adhered to. And if those terms are not adhered to, then it is considered rape. So like in this situation, she was very much willing to participate in the act, but she laid out conditions. And if you don't adhere to those conditions, then that is considered rape, because I specifically said this is what I will do. And how do you prove, the question is, you know, how do you prove it? Well, I don't know. But if a jury says that you
think proof,
that's it. So, I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, I'll do this only if you wear a condom. And then you take the condom off. That's considered rape. Okay? You know, I'll do this if, I mean, I'm just being, you know,
absolutely.
Now.
Yeah,
I'll do this if, you know, we're on the top floor. You know, whatever it is, if the person says it and it's mutually agreed upon at the beginning and there's any deviation from that and the person feels victimized, that is considered rape. And so I think that's something that begin to educate our young men on, because they could engage something and really think that, you know, hey, she said yes or he said yes, and we're, you know, we're moving on, and then, you know, there's, you know, one small deviation from what was said, and that person could be, you know, ending up, you know, in a legal situation, a legal bind. So I just wanted to put that out there as well.
I will have that conversation with my son tonight.
Yeah,
I will have that, because I guess for me, and I won't dwell on this too much, if you didn't want him to ejaculate in you, use a condom. I mean, and that's just my thought process, but I'm sure it was more to the case. But, I mean, he got convicted either way, and now he is a convicted rapist. Wow.
Well, let me just read you really quick. Let me just read from you from the article. It says, the prosecutors decided not to charge him as they believed it would be impossible to prove that his decision was not spontaneous and made at the point of ejaculation. The woman challenged the decision and won. The ruling said she believed that he intended and agreed to withdraw before ejaculation. He knew and understood that this was the only basis on which she was prepared to have sexual intercourse with him. In short, there is evidence that he deliberately ignored the basis of her consent to penetration as a manifestation of his control over her. Okay.
Mm. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes
so,
sense.
So, and the headline of that paper said, "Sex." Yes, the headline of that paper said, "Sex with consent can still be rape." And it says, "Consent could still lead to rape charge." Judges say that are potentially highly damaging to public understanding of consent in rape. It seems strange that it needs to be spelled out, but it's true. You know, they're working definitions of consent, and if someone says this is what they want or this is not what they want, you have to adhere to that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow, that's heavy. That's super heavy. I will have that conversation tonight. Tonight we are going to discuss
Happy birthday.
Oh, yeah, happy birthday. We got some serious business to discuss, brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's so funny in instances of rape. It seems like the woman or the man, because men are getting raped, they just don't hear about it as much, that it's very easy to shame the victim. Almost like I just said, well, she should have had him wear a condom. That's just my first thought process. And normally that is, it's normally the thought process of a lot of people. Like, you hear this issue with seen in Hollywood where all of these women, I think it's up to 70 something now, are accusing him of, you know, touching them without their consent. But you had Donna Karen come out and say, hey, some of these women asked for it. You understand what I'm saying? And it's hard to wrap your brain around someone being raped without the rape that we think of on the movies, the brutal one. He has a gun. He's beating you up. He's forcing you. And when a woman does, when she says that she's been raped, why is it so easy for society to just push that off to the side and assume that she's lying or bring her past into question? If she's been promiscuous, then she had to have consented to the rape. There's no way you can rape a promiscuous woman. Why do you guys think that it's like that in this society? Greg, I'll throw this one to you first, but Sandra, I am so interested in what you have to say about this one.
It's easier. It's easier to believe that. You know, you have a prestigious man that, you know, community and society esteem him as a great man of character, a great man of value.
Mm-hmm.
And for mm-hmm. someone to actually say that this person did this to her, it's automatically, they look at his character, what he looks like and what he has done versus hers. Now, if she mm-hmm. is dressing a certain type of way or she gets around with other different people, they don't take into account of the individual instance. They take account of everything they've seen in the past, and they only make that assumption. And they'll realize that sociopaths are people that are very cutting and smooth, and they
mm-hmm.
make it look like they don't do anything at all. You know,
mm-hmm.
normally a rape person, a rapist is not going to be out there like, ah, I'm a rapist, come in, let me rape you. You know,
right.
it's some
right.
kind of a way that this person is getting raped. Most likely she knows this particular person, so he's not a stranger. He makes the person comfortable. He makes the person relax. So when that all that comes down and that stuff happens to that particular young person, you know, nobody wants to defame that particular man's character, because it's hard to actually try to get inside of that, because he doesn't let anybody inside of it. He got everybody fooled.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sandra, what's your input on that?
I don't know. I just think that we just lived in a warped society, and I think that, like Gregory said, it's just easier to be able to do that, especially in a male-dominated society. So I just don't, you know, regardless of someone's past, regardless of even someone's right to change their mind in the middle of an act, I don't think that anyone should ever be shamed for speaking up. And I think what ends up happening when those kind of things happen, and you know what, we're all guilty of it. Like, we think about the Bill Cosby case and all these different cases that come up, and the first thing we think is, oh, they just want money, you know. And
mm-hmm.
really our first thing, we need to kind of maintain the whole thought of, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But at the same time,
yeah.
we need to, in this case, though, we need to kind of think along the lines, well, guilty until proven innocent in a case where someone has been victimized in that case. Because most time, and don't get me wrong, there are always instances of people who are lying, and, you know, there's always those
mm-hmm.
seeking money and all that. But most times a woman would not drag her name through the mud and would not put herself in that position to be exposed unless there was truth to that. I don't think that's typical. Of course, you have women who are dealing with all types of issues, all types of emotional, you know, disturbances and troubles, and so they do those kind of things. But I think more than not that it's not the case. And one of the things that I, you know, also realize is that when those kind of things happen, you're really just putting real victims in a position to not want to come forward
right.
and not want to share.
Right.
And you have people
yeah.
who are stuck in this place of just being stuck basically and not coming forward and just being in a place where they just are dealing with that on their own. Most times not telling anyone, you know, just dealing with the trauma of that all on their own. So
yeah.
I think that we need to reserve that kind of judgment and, you know, just if a person says it, then more than likely it's true. And parents, my advice to you is that if your child tells you that someone is touching them or someone has
mm-hmm.
done something to them, you need to believe them, regardless
mm-hmm.
of what the circumstances are. You
Absolutely.
Must believe them, fully
mm-hmm.
address it, and, you know, do whatever you need to do legally and emotionally to get them the help that they
yeah.
need.
Yeah.
Now,
absolutely.
Now, ladies, even speaking on that, ladies, so even growing up and lady friends that I have, I could say about 70% of them have been molested.
Mm, yeah, it's very common. It's very common.
Very common. And,
mm-hmm.
like, when you hear that, like, if you're dating a woman and you hear that, and she's like, well,
mm-hmm.
I didn't tell anybody. Well, it's a,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a family member. You know, this happened
mm-hmm.
to me. No, as a
mm-hmm.
man, you don't know how to handle that. You don't even know how to
it's
approach
very common.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
but,
it's
you know,
so
she has a smile on her face and she's walking around like everything's okay, but deep down she's hurting
mm-hmm.
and she doesn't know
mm-hmm.
how to actually function. Or, as you
mm-hmm.
guys were saying earlier, you know, she probably think that's normal.
Yeah.
And she has blocked
yeah.
it out and made it seem like this is what she's supposed to be like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I want to say something that's kind of a bit of a confession, and I'm really glad that we are having this discussion. I did not think that I would get as much out of it as I have, and it has made me shine a light on my thought process on certain situations. And I just get that rape is a crime of the victim's perception. It doesn't matter what I saw, what I think she did. I mean, because there's a time where the young lady that I mentioned that was getting passed around, there's no way that anybody could have told me that she was being raped in that room.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? She may have been being
mm-hmm.
raped. You understand what I'm saying? So my
mm-hmm.
thought process is one that now I need to correct, that now I need
mm-hmm.
to think about. You know what I mean? And I want to, because we only have a few more minutes, but before we close the show out, I really want to see if we can discuss avenues for people or children, grown women. I mean, it could be children, women, men, boys. What are some avenues that they have to deal with this type of trauma? Or what are some things that we can tell them that they can do? Because your life changes, but it's not over. You don't have to move forward in that direction. You can always change. Sandra, do you have anything that you can tell our youth? And like I said, maybe even some women who have been in a situation like this, what can they do?
They need to get help. That
mm-hmm.
might mean different things for different people. You know, lying on someone's
mm-hmm.
couch and, you know, spilling your guts might not work for everyone, but
right.
therapy does need to happen on some level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be with, you know, the most renowned psychiatrist in your town or therapist in your town. It could just be someone that you trust where you're really able to talk with. But you have to be
mm-hmm.
very careful, because once you open a Pandora's box, you have to be able to process
mm-hmm.
that. And so it can't just be, you know, random, but somebody that is trained to be able to work through those issues with people, with young people, well, with people in general, that
mm-hmm.
needs to happen. But I wanted to say something about children who have not experience that. When you were talking about you and your wife, Gregory, you know, how you handle your young ladies, that is one of the things, a team approach, a mother-father approach is one of the sure ways to prevent young girls from making the choice to get involved in illicit relationships. And it's not foolproof, but it's clear that that works for families, because girls have an opportunity to see a healthy relationship, and it's like a team approach to handling, you know, adolescent issues, and they see love, pure love. But it's not all laws for single, you know, parent children in single family homes, but parents have to be, especially single parents, have to be intentional about training their children and talking to them about relationships. But I want to say one thing that I do with my young people, and it's not only regarding sexual issues, it's regarding bullying or regarding anything that they may be confronted with. If parents prepare young people, a lot of times, you know, even as adults, when we're confronted with issues, like, have you ever been in a situation where somebody gets on your nerves and you think to yourself, like, 3 hours later, oh, I wish I would have said that, or, you know, I wish I would have responded that way. If somebody gets on your nerves, you're thinking, oh, I could have said that, I should have said that. Well, with young people, if you prepare them to handle situations before they happen, they're more than likely to respond in a positive way. So if you begin to role play with your young people, with your children, how to handle situations, what do you do if a boy comes up to you and tells you that you're the best thing ever and you're, you know, you're the most beautiful thing ever? How do you handle that? How do you handle if someone offers you a drink and you don't want to drink? Well, so literally role play with your children at the dinner table so they can have comeback. And if you give them comeback, then more than likely that will trigger in their mind when they're confronted with the situation. So I do this with a lot of children who are being bullied. How to respond to a situation when somebody makes a real derogatory remark towards you. How to respond to a situation when, you know, somebody's trying to pressure you to do something that you don't want to do. So that can work with, you know, parents and just mentors in general to help young people in that situation. But as far as young women who have already been raped, who might have already been raped, I would suggest that a professional, you know, parents seek out a professional, or if, you know, if someone's listening that's actually an educator in the school system, then you make the referral to the family for someone who can help, because that is deep. And it just is more than just, you know, you talking to your best friend or you talking to a relative about what happened, because there's a lot there's a lot that needs to be uncovered and there's a lot that needs to be addressed, and it's not something that can just, you know, typically be done with a conversation with a lay person. So I would suggest that they seek, you know, professional help concerning that.
Well, I just want to say this. We have probably about right under 5 minutes on this show. Sandra, I have enjoyed you immensely. I love you to death.
Thank you.
I really want you to consider coming back on future shows. I mean, this was just enlightening. It was awesome.
Absolutely.
It was everything. It was everything. And I just want to tell you. Oh, God.
My birthday's in August.
Well, wait a minute.
I know, but I didn't get you anything. So this is your birthday gift.
No. You got to come back. You need to give him another gift of some sort.
I just want to close the show.
Any final comments? I will hold my final comments tonight. Greg, if you have anything, please, and then let's let Sandra close it out.
Okay, no problem. The final thoughts that I wanted to make sure that we got through to our listeners this week is that a lot of young boys don't understand what they're doing to these young ladies, and these young ladies also don't understand that they are truly the victim, because nobody's actually, or a lot of people, is not believing their words. You should not feel sorry for yourself. This is not something that you have brought upon yourself. Not because of the way you dress or even the way you talk, you should deserve anything from a man that is not what you accept. So what we're trying to give out here is that you guys have an avenue to speak to, you know, someone that you trust that can actually will believe you without being a person that will condemn you or ridicule you for whatever action that has happened unto you. So please reach out to any type of authority that you do trust, that you do believe will be able to help you. There are people out there that really truly do love you, and that this is not something that is supposed to be taken on for you to the grave and taken on to other things, into your adulthood and also to different relationships. Please seek out help like Sandra has spoken of. And hopefully, you know, God willing, anything that does happen to you will be able to be healed.
Sandra, we got about 2 minutes, no pressure, but can you please close us out?
I wanted to reiterate what Gregory said. You know, if you've been a victim of rape, it is not the end. I know it feels like the end sometimes, but it's not the end. And there is help and there is restoration. And so I would encourage you to also seek out help. If you're a young person listening to this, or if you're the parent of a young person and you don't know where to seek help, go to your child's school and even without giving a whole lot of information, I get asked about referrals all the time, and I don't prod and I don't, you know, ask, you know, probing questions if the family doesn't want to share. I just try to hear what they say and give them the proper referral. So seek as much, you know, seek help from the school if necessary. And if you have not been a victim of this, like Gregory said, you are kings and queens, and, you know, you do not deserve any situation that you do not consent to. And sex is sex by definition, as far as, you know, I'm going to go there, but God is concerned, is between a man and a wife, and between two people who love one another. And so you do not have to be in that situation. And again, most times when you speak to women who have made decisions to engage in sexual activity at a young age, when you ask them years later, most times they're regretful of that decision. So hold on to your decision to hold on and be encouraged.
Good night. Thank you. Sandra, you have to come back.
I will. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Thank you, Sandra.
All right. Bye-bye.